Hi, I'm Greg Schaefer, and welcome to the Virtual CISO Moment. John Christley joins us today. He is the Director of IT Security at Summit 7. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Greg. Great to be here and very pleased to be part of what you're doing for the industry with these interviews. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, what started out as like a little bit of a test, I thought I'd have to bribe people with like Starbucks gift cards and all that. And I didn't have to. I started with folks that I knew, my comfort people. And here I am. I think you're like my 140th after
That's
about
great.
No more than 2 years. So it's a blessing and I love it and I appreciate that. Would love to hear about your cybersecurity journey, how and why you got started in this wonderful field of cyber and what you're up to today.
Yeah, well, let me start by saying I had to do a count today. I looked at LinkedIn before we started and had to go back. I've actually been in IT for 33 years this year. It doesn't even seem possible. Some of it feels like yesterday is when I got my start. I am really that old. I do have the gray hairs to prove it. But I didn't get started in IT security, and I think that's important. I got started in IT. I actually got started in IT by accident. I wasn't supposed to go into IT. That wasn't the master plan for my parents, you know, what they had for me. I was actually supposed to become an accountant, a CPA like them. And it turns out I didn't like accounting. I can do it, but I don't like it. And didn't do well in college and those kind of studies. So I was doing retail for many years. I was working retail jobs after I came out of the military. So after high school, went into the military, did my time, came out, went into retail. Learned a lot about customer service and how to talk to people and deal with difficult situations from retail, which I think was a good base for where I was headed, even though I didn't know I was headed there. Started, as a lot of people do, and maybe people that are listening to this, if they're starting their careers, maybe they don't realize where some of us have started and maybe where they need to start. I started in desktop support. They didn't call it that back then. I was working for a musicians union in New York City, right in Times Square in the old Paramount building, doing what they call data processing support specialist. These days you'd call that an IT tech or a desktop tech, but it was same concepts. But back then we had Novell NetWare. We had Data General Unix. We had Token Ring Network.
Yes.
I know there. Yeah, there you go. And there are people that have experience way before me, right? I talk to people that remember punch cards and things like that. I don't. I entered the industry, if you will, DOS 622 and what I just said, Windows 3.1.1 for work groups. You know, that's sort of where I entered the industry. Right. What's important about where I started was cybersecurity was not really a thing back then. It sort of was. I can remember the Melissa virus and the I love you virus and things like that. But yeah, we had viruses. We had problems. Well, we didn't have the kind of problems we have today. You didn't have ransomware per se. You didn't have nation states hacking in, at least that I recall. And boy, what a journey. I went through many years of network administration, trying to climb that ladder, as everybody does when you're young, trying to get to the next level. I made it to chief technology officer, and I thought, I'm golden, right? And thought I was rich at that point. I was making more money than ever in my career. And then I accidentally fell into security in this way. I was in charge of the company Cisco PIX Firewalls as part of my career. Yeah. Uh-huh. And all of a sudden, I'm the security guy because I know firewalls and I didn't really know them that well. But boy, did I learn. And I learned from some people that did know them better. And all of a sudden, I found out that I like this security thing. I like this sort of cat and mouse game with hackers and things. Because at that point, you know, yes, there's people trying to break in by that point in my career. And I gravitated towards it. It was I don't know if it's my prior military, if it's back pre-military, I was a volunteer fireman. I don't know if there's parts of that aspect. I'm not a psychologist, so I can't figure this out for myself, but there's something about trying to put the fire out or come to the rescue of, you know, something that really stuck with me. 33 years later, I have now served three times as a CISO. I've done a lot of virtual CISO, actually doing virtual CISO work, mostly for banks was the industry that I was doing it for through a company that I was working for. So I've got that real frontline, real life experience, and I'll sort of end this piece with this. I've suffered through a couple breaches in my time, and I think that's unique for somebody in my position to actually stand out here and admit it. There was nothing I could really have done about it in hindsight. It sucked, if I'm being honest. It was horrendous. It was horrible. But I got to meet some really good cyber incident responders from those companies that you call in when you have to call the insurance company and call that company or those companies in. They taught me a lot. They taught me a lot more about how to better defend. And then I became a cyber incident responder and computer forensics expert as a result, and never looking back. So here I am.
Oh, yeah, great history. And I can say that I parallel a little bit about it. I'm counting my 35th year in this wonderful world. And yes, my entry into this whole thing happened to be firewall as well, too, because I was in charge of networking. And, well, you know, who gets to do the first firewall? It was me. And right. It was, I think, I'm sure you had this inflection point, too, at some point in time where you realized that you were spending more time more concerned about stopping people from talking than people actually talking and getting to the resources.
Right.
But I think it's hugely important, the IT experience before hitting cyber. There's a lot on LinkedIn right now as far as discussion, entry level cyber, which my view on that is that there really isn't such a thing as an entry level cyber in many cases, and that you have to understand what it is you're protecting before you start actually protecting it. And I believe that one path to that is having prior experience in IT. I'd like to hear your view on that, if that helped you with the cyber mindset, if you will, and if so, in what way?
Yeah, Greg, I'll start out by saying this. I don't think it's possible to just land a role as a CISO. Now, that's not always the case. Certain startups, certain positions, if you own your own company, you can call yourself whatever you want. You could be CEO, you could be CISO. But I think by and large, out there in our world, in the industry, you're not going to land a role right out of the gate. And when I say out of the gate, I mean right out of the military, right out of college. Now, military is a different story. It depends. If this is what you did in the military, I did not. I was a cannon crew member on a howitzer. That wasn't my field of specialty. That wasn't my MOS. I had to learn IT, and I mean it. I had to learn, you know, TCP/IP, and I had to learn networking, and, you know, I didn't know how to make my own patch cables way back, right? This is a thing. And if you've ever done that and you got it wrong a few times and things didn't work, you understand what I'm talking about. I do a lot of mentoring these days, and I've actually turned that into, so I just released my first book. It's on Amazon. We'll talk about that, you know, later. I did a course, my first course on Udemy, and it was how to become a CISO. And why? Well, the reason I did this, Greg, was people keep asking the same thing. Hey, you're a three-time CISO, so how do I become a CISO? And, you know, my answer is you don't. If I'm talking to somebody who's younger and maybe right out of college, you don't just become a CISO. You've got to learn the basics. So I recommend to people, you know, look, whether you start in desktop support or server support or network support, right, all these things, and kind of follow the CompTIA. I love some of their stuff, right? I was a Security Plus before I was a CISSP. But see, there's a point. I also studied A Plus before I got into any of that, because they're going to ask you things. And how do I know what TCP and UDP and ports and port numbers? And you have to learn the basics. I mimic it to the medical field. My wife is a physical therapist. My daughter is going to become a physical therapist, God willing. And they don't learn how to become a physical therapist first. They have to learn anatomy and, you know, all these kind of things. It's the same thing in our field. You have to have some of the basics. You have to understand networking, because otherwise, how do you know what to protect and how to protect?
Exactly.
So, yeah, I believe there's a base that is almost required in our industry.
It's amazing that today, too, you talk about the basics and you talk about TCP/IP and the OSI model and all of that. These are things that have been around since you and I started in this field. It's literally is the basics. And it points to the fact that even though a lot of things change in technology, IT and cyber, but the basics pretty much remain the same. So you get a nice claw into that. Even with cable making, and I had to chuckle a little bit because my first my first boss was a former Marine drill instructor. I've mentioned that a few times on here. And he would refer to cable making as, you know, almost as punishment, because you couldn't buy really patch cables at the time, or you could, but they were super expensive. Right. And, you know, you didn't have to worry about certifying them at the time for 10 megabits. So he would call it, if you got on his super high intensity training list, then you would make cables. And obviously you could spell out the acronym. So With all of that, and the fact too that you've done some work, the VC sewing too with the banks and all that, which would be some of the smaller, I'm sure, banks, because most larger banks would have a CISO.
Correct.
Right now, at this particular second, what would you think is one or a couple of the most significant threats to small and mid-sized business information security?
Well, and I'll tell you, the vantage point that I have and I've had for a few years is a lot of SMB. Now, in the industry that I'm currently working in, it's mostly the defense industrial base. It's the DIB subcontractors, not necessarily the big contractor, you know, the primes, some of them too, but mostly their subcontractors. That's sort of the world that I am living in these days and have been for, gosh, almost 4 or 5 years now. But that encompasses not only the people that make things, widgets, you know, parts for the defense industrial base. It also involves education. So there's a research component to this in higher education, which is an industry that I served as a CISO in my past. Back then, we were worried about HIPAA and PCI. Didn't realize that a few years later, they'd be worried about NIST 800-171 and CMMC like they are now. And I go back to the basics. So the SMB community, and again, my background, if you look at my LinkedIn, you'll see I have a bunch of different industry experience, but I've been doing the same kind of work all along. I've done HIPAA, I've done PCI, I've done, you know, you name it, but it's all sort of the same under the covers. It's helping people get more secure and more compliant. And the SMB community as a whole, what I see is they tend not to have the resources. Now, can they have the resources? Depends on what kind of company and what their finances look like. Some of them can afford to hire, I don't even want to say a CISO, because when I say CISO, people think about this really expensive resource. How about a virtual CISO? How about hiring a company that can offer you, you know, just in time, just when needed to help you get, you know, clean? Some companies can, but some of the really, really micro businesses, right? The mom and pops of the world, the very, very small shops, they have a hard time just staying afloat and making payroll sometimes. It's hard for them to hire good help. They figure, hey, we've got this network set up and it's running. Let's move on.
Right.
No, it's not about that. Networks these days take continual care and feeding, not only the network side, but definitely the security side. And I find that SMBs, they just lack people around them, putting their arms around them and helping them with cybersecurity and compliance needs. It's a real big issue. It's not so much a skills gap that's out there. I mean, we talk about that, you know, in our world, right? You'll see that all over social media. But for the SMB, it's either they don't prioritize it until it's too late. I did a podcast years ago for EC Council when I was up for CISO of the Year, and I didn't win. I was a runner up. It's okay. A really good colleague of mine from Optiv got it. That's okay. But I did a podcast called It Takes a Breach, and you can find it out there. It really does take a breach for some companies, whether you're small, medium, or extremely large, to really pay attention. And then the checkbooks start flying open. But that's unfortunate for the SMB community, because by then it's usually too late.
I am more and more convinced as we walk, as time goes on, that a lot of the problems with SMBs are related to how we approach them in our industry, in the information security industry. You touched on that they could use to have people around them to sort of shepherd them. They don't necessarily realize that there's an issue. But yet, and I've said this a couple of times recently on the podcast, our industry seems to be ignoring that. And here's a case in point, and I've mentioned this a few times before, but let's just talk about Bank of America. They recently had a breach, recently being a few months ago. And it was a third-party subcontractor, service provider, what have you. It, typical story. Nothing's changed since Target a decade ago, right?
Right.
And yet, what is the industry's response? The industry's response is to say, we're not doing well with third-party risk management, okay? What about looking at the root cause? Don't we always talk about like post-mortem, look at root cause? And yet, how are we looking at serving the SMB market? And I pivot on this to what we do, for example, with conferences. You go to conferences. I just went to one last week or a couple weeks ago. And with the idea of like, how many vendors here and how many sessions are we actually teaching ourselves about this issue with small and mid-sized businesses? We're not. We're focused on the bigger corporations, and why? Because of the money.
Money.
And And this, I think, is a serious problem. So I'm glad that you touched on that. But how, from your perspective, how can we change that in our industry? How can we police ourselves, if you will, to put more light on the necessity of reaching out to these SMBs? And it doesn't mean them hiring a virtual CISO or some other thing. It means, I know the government has their sites out there, the SBA has stuff and CISA and all that, but that's not it. It's not knocking on their door. It's not helping them. Do you have any ideas on how we can help? Because that's what I'm really looking for, is ideas in that area.
Well, let me give you a couple of thoughts on this that I do have. I own my own MSP for 13 and a half years and got out of it during COVID, you know, when the time was right to get out. And but I think it's sort of a testament to serving small business. That's who I served. I wasn't large enough, if I'm being honest. I didn't have enough people around me to service larger. I couldn't even service kind of on the high end of medium, right? I focused on small businesses. And I'll tell you why I think I was as successful as I think I was, because I listened to the small business. I would craft packages around what they needed. Now, it was still within a menu of what I was offering, okay? I had to say no at times. People would ask me for things that were not in my specialty area, but I listened. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the key, Greg. And by the way, you and I go to some of the same conferences, or that's where I saw you last, and we got together for this. But I think, you know, you're right, it's profit. A lot of the companies that are out there, and I understand it, I get it. These companies that have so many staff on board, they've got a lot of payroll and a lot of costs, and they have to make money. So they can't focus on SMB sometimes. They just can't. But there has to be somebody out there that can. Typically, what I'm seeing are the local, not even regional, but local MSPs are sort of the ones that are prime and ready. I mean, they've got the, you know, somebody had to set up these SMBs networks and computers and sell them computers. And in a lot of places, it's the local MSP that is in there. They've got the relationship, but they don't have the cybersecurity experience. I was with a company that was buying up these smaller MSPs, and they would look for them. And what they found was they had really good networking and server and virtual server, and they could even migrate them to the cloud. They had virtual CIO offerings, which was great, but they didn't really have a security practice to really say. I mean, they could do your typical antivirus and your data backup, but it's a different specialty. It's like being a doctor. There's different specialties. Being a CISO or VCISO is a specialty. And that's the thing. Trying to get that specialty knowledge down to the SMB is tough, and it takes a focus. Now, some advice I have for MSPs or some of these product companies is there's got to be some offerings and some packages that can be carved out and focused on SMB. I've studied a lot of websites of providers and MSPs, and you'll see some of them, not everybody puts their prices out there or their packages, but some do. And I didn't, if I'm being honest. I would craft a package around what my customer needed, and I didn't want to put my prices out there, right? Somebody's going to come and undercut you. But those that do, what you'll notice is they don't really have packages for the 5, 10, 15, 20 user necessarily. They stay away from that. It's like, why? Those are some of the companies that need the most help. They need help just as much as anybody else, the bigger companies. And yet we just don't have enough knowledge being flowed down to those really smalls. And then what's going to happen is those really smalls, they're either not going to be compliant because they can't get there. They're not going to be secure, so they get breached. The cost of this is going to drive them right out of business. That's our fear in the defense industrial base, is the cost of compliance is going to drive them to say, then I'm going to get out of this. I'm not going to focus on that industry. I'm not going to worry about that kind of work, or I'm going to sell. I'm going to allow myself to get merged, if possible. So it's a real problem for SMBs to get what they need.
Yeah, the flow down of knowledge, I think that's part of the challenge with the path. So I think also one suggestion is, you talked about local MSPs, also local folks like working with their chambers, I think might not be such a bad idea to kind of help get the word down. But we have to do something, because that's where the real risk is. And I don't remember what the size of the company was involved in the BOA breach. I think that they were like a few hundred. It wasn't like quite a mom and pop, but it was still in the SMB category. And of course, you mentioned too about the regulatory requirements, CMMC, and of course now MSPs are going to have to be CMMC compliant if they're dealing with folks, because they're going to deal with CUI. That can be a whole nother conversation. And I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, because I do want to ask you about your book. Tell us about your book, what it is, what's the title, and what it is about.
Oh, I appreciate that, Craig. Yeah, this has been a labor of love for me, this first book. And I already have my second one planned to be released here soon. I've wanted to be part of a book for, my entire career. I was supposed to be part of an ISO 27001 book many, many years ago, and it didn't happen, and would have required a lot more time than I thought I had at the time. Mm-hmm. And now as I get towards the later part of my career, I find a little bit more time to sit down and write. So I finally put a book together. The first one I wanted to release was, surprise, surprise, How to Become a CISO, and some advice for those aspiring CISOs, or those, it's really targeted towards kind of those people coming out of college, or maybe their career changing, and they say, look, I've been doing networking, but that security stuff, that looks, let's be real, they think it's sexy, it's cool, it makes a lot more money, and that can all be true, but there's also the other side of it that I needed to tell the story of at least my experience, one guy who's been a CISO three times. So the book is called How to Become a CISO, mm-hmm. and it's available on Amazon and paper book and on Kindle. Which I think is just so cool. Amazon does such a great job. And I'm not trying to sell anything. If anybody goes out there and searches for it, search for my, How to Become a CISO, look me up. Mm-hmm. Give me a little while. I'll have more than one book out there. I have another one that's really cool coming out, because I'm doing it with my family. And I want to bring the aspect of the social media concerns from a parent and another parent who has a teenage daughter and her experience. The whole idea around the book is just trying to help people. It's really not about the money. That's cool. That's a side effect, but it's about just trying to help and put some of this information out there into our universe, into our ecosystem. And if it helps anybody, and the feedback I'm getting already from people is it's helping them. It's giving them almost a roadmap of how to get to where they want to be, depending on where they're jumping on this journey from. So I'm super excited about it. I'm sorry, Greg, I misstepped. I got to go back. I'm getting myself confused. That's how excited about some of this I am. How to Become a CISO is actually my first Udemy course, my first instructional course on Udemy. Uh-huh. Okay. The book, I can't believe I just made that faux pas. The book is the book is called The Basics of Cybersecurity.
Oh, okay.
And again, look me up on Amazon. My name is right there on the screen. Look me up and you'll find that book. And I apologize. It's just, I did kind of two things at the same time. I within the same short couple of months, I released a course on Udemy, and I released a book on Amazon. And
I'm assuming that the book, then, when we talk about the basics of cybersecurity, you're literally talking about what we were talking about a little bit earlier, the importance of the basics, instead of like jumping into, well, you've seen that famous meme that's on LinkedIn, this young, thin guy with like really long legs, and he's stretching across like five steps to cybersecurity over all the other ones. That's kind of what we're talking about, right?
It is. And, I go into some of the other basics things. And when I talk about cybersecurity, I'm trying to give an education about, what we have to worry about in our world, in the seats we hold, because people may not think so. I find a lot of people out there think, I want to get into cybersecurity, it's all about hacking. Well, yes. And of course, ethical hacking and pen testing. And that's a cool, I have some of the best colleagues in the industry that do that for a living. Mm-hmm. Some of this is different. This is about protecting the corporate IP and the data that you are entrusted with if you hold data for your customers. So I talk about some of the basics, and amazingly enough, I go back to, and I remember Target. I can remember my wife telling me we're never shopping at Target again after that. And sure enough, wait long enough and we're back at Target again, right? But some of the basics, patch management and looking at firewalls and the principle of least privilege. And the buzzword today is zero trust. I believe in it wholeheartedly. I study it. I try to do it. It's very difficult at times to, achieve zero trust, but it's where we should be all thinking. So I try to bring people through a journey in the book. It's not a huge book. It's not a difficult read, but it's like, it starts with asset management. You can't protect what you don't know you have.
So. Absolutely. And that's a mantra, certainly, of cyber. When you said intellectual property, I think one of the things, getting back to the concept of how to become a CISO, and I would have said, first of all, that maybe you can do a second course of why do you want to become a CISO? But on my path, I always tell folks, it's like, learn the business. It's not just technology. And my inflection point on there, one of them was when I had the realization coming from a networking background that a lot of times when people were talking about, to use your words, protecting IP, they weren't talking about protecting IP addresses. They're talking about protecting. That was a revelation for me. Oh, that means something different. I got that now.
Right.
Well, there's a lot of stress in cyber. We have a serious issue with mental health. I talk about this a lot because I've had to deal with it. I was once in a position that I did not manage the stress the way I should have. And it was unhealthy for me. And ultimately, the best way to manage the stress is to remove yourself from a stressful situation, which is what I did. But you can't totally remove yourself from the stress of cyber. So what's one of the things you do to, I like to use the word decompress?
Yeah. And this has been a big part of my world. And, you know, burnout is real in IT and cyber, or it can be. A lot of it depends on where you work, what they do, who you work for, what kind of team you have. You'll see that I've moved around a bit in my career because I knew I had to make some better choices for myself, or I was going to, maybe I was already burned out. Mm-hmm. You know, now as I get a little more senior and I understand and use some of the tools that we have to use, I will tell you, I practice, I don't want to say at 5 o'clock, I turn the phone off and leave. In my world, that's not always possible at times, but I try to walk away. I try to put that phone in the other room. In my role, I'm kind of always on call just in case, but that doesn't mean that the phone has to be on your hip at all times. Right. I like to travel. You're going to see a future book come out, hint, hint, about traveling, because we do a lot of travel, and I like to take in concerts. And you know, the bottom line is just break away. I used to do a lot more biking and triathlons than I do these days, but I like to do a lot of walking. But the idea is, no matter what it is that you do or what you find, you've got to disconnect. Unhook those wires, and you've got to do something, whether it's with your family, your friends, yourself, take yourself to a movie, do something and try to put that out of your head. It's tough. It's tough. And in our world, I've woken up many times with a solution that I just dreamed about. Isn't that crazy? And I had to write it down. And I do keep a pad and a pen by the bed. That's a little nuts. Okay. And I admit that, but it happens because I'm thinking about it so much and there's so much going on. I'm trying to decompress more and more and realize, you know, sometimes it's just not worth it. It will be there tomorrow, and it doesn't always have to be fixed right now, but it can be tough. And unfortunately, I'll just end this little part with this. I've unfortunately seen what it does to people. We worry about people. We worry about burnout. I've actually known somebody who passed away, and we believe it was because of stress on the job. And that is the most horrendous piece. You don't want anybody going through that. No. So you got to find a way to disconnect.
Well, I'm sorry about that, but I appreciate you sharing that with us. Your future plans, you talked about, for example, a book on traveling. When is that due? And what is the travel focus on?
Yeah.
You can talk about whatever you want to talk about, actually.
Exactly. So, you know, I want to keep doing this book thing. I enjoy it. I have found it's almost therapeutic for me to have a release where I can sit down and write out. I've had a podcast of my own for going on 2 years, and that's great. I did a little bit of webcasting to YouTube and other things. That's great, too. But it was all just me doing it and putting it out there in the world. The book, you know, sitting down to actually write the book and being an author by myself sitting down is sort of a practice. It's a way of doing things that I found very therapeutic, and then learning how to self-publish. And I had to do some study. It's almost going back to my A+ and Security Plus roots. I don't know if I'm any good at it yet, but I'm able to do it and get through it and get a book that all of a sudden it shows up on Amazon. And I have family friends that showed up one night for a group dinner. They had the book in their hand asking me to sign it. And I was like, what a trip. This is just crazy. But so I'm definitely going to continue to do more books. One of two that I have two more planned. One I'm doing with a family, and it's more on family and how to stay safe online and in the social world that we all live in. And I'm bringing the input of my wife and my 17-year-old daughter, because who's more expert at that kind of stuff than them?
Exactly,
I'm learning from them as a parent. So I want to put that out into, and by the way, we also have senior, you know, I call it grandparents, my wife's, you know, relative elderly, and they have issues online, don't they? And so that's the next book, is trying to teach everybody about how to put our arms around all of that. And then the third book I would say in the series that Elise is mentally queued up is a travel book. Now, we like to cruise. We've done a lot of cruising in all the years we've been married, my wife and I. So I want to put out a book about cruising from the perspective of somebody who does it a lot. And it's I don't know if it's a travel guide, but it's really about, it also talks about ways to streamline things and ways to, you know, tips and tricks, but also be careful, right? There's some dangers in traveling and cruising, and there can be, depending on what, you know, a port or things you're, so I want to talk about that, because nobody said that to me. Maybe there was a book and I didn't know to go buy it, but we had to learn some things, you know, on the job training as we went. So I want to put that out there. And again, it's a blast. I'm having a blast doing it.
Well, that's great. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing those works. I'm also looking forward to checking out your book. Maybe I can get a signed copy one of these days, The Basics of Cybersecurity, which is available on Amazon. You mentioned you have a podcast. What's the name of that, and how can they get to that?
Yeah, that one's on Spotify. It's Cyber Talk Now, all one word. There is a lot of cyber stuff out on Spotify. So look for Cyber Talk Now, all one word, or just search for me and you'll find it. And that's been a lot of fun as well. And let me say this, Greg, and I appreciate, boy, I'd love to send you a signed copy. So afterwards, I'm going to get your address. You're going to get a signed copy. And those of you that are listening to this, if you would like a copy of the book, reach out to me and you might get one, and we'll see how that goes. So
that's awesome. Well, John, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate you taking your time this morning to share your wonderful wisdom over almost as long as I've been doing it, but you know, it's about the same amount of time. We've seen a lot in the 30 odd years. So thank you so much.
Absolutely, Greg. Thanks for having me here.
And everybody, stay secure.